Podcast. I'm Allison Little, a best-selling author, keynote speaker, and award-winning entrepreneur who has built businesses and brands for the past decade. I'm passionate about helping high achievers launch to the next level. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Launch Podcast with Allison Little. Today's episode is called The Facilitative Leader with Alan Hunkins. Alan is a CEO of Hunkins Leadership Group and wants to create a vibrant, alive world by kindling the fire of brilliance in people. He helps leaders adopt the facilitative mindset, a set of beliefs and behaviors that helps in achieving performance goals easier. Oh my gosh, I am so excited about this interview. I know that it is going to help us as leaders really facilitate the growth process in others, and so that it's less stress for us and so that we can reach our performance goals better and easier, but also empower the people that we're working with and empower our team. So hello, Alan. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Allison. It's my pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So you captured a lot of good pieces. So yeah, my name is Alain, and that is because my mother is from Brussels, Belgium. She gave me a super common French name, which makes a lot of sense if you're growing up in a French-speaking country. Not so easy when you're growing up in Flushing, Queens, which is where I grew up, where I got called all sorts of names, some of which started with A, but not often Alain. Anyway, so my life mission, you kind of named it, which is really about helping people to live more passionately, vibrant, and alive by kindling the fire of brilliance in people. And so for me, when I say leadership, which is what I'm about, I don't define leadership as a job title. To me, anytime that any of us are trying to get anything accomplished with anyone, which could be just ourselves, by the way, could be with somebody else, but that takes leadership. And if you think about it, we're all leading every day. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how can we be leading smarter? How can we be leading more powerfully? And how can we be leading with less stress? Mm-hmm. And so my work, my research, my writing, my coaching is all about helping leaders crack that code.
Mm. And it's such an important thing that you said, because we are all leading others. And a lot of times what I'll hear from listeners or from people that I meet is they'll be like, well, I'm not in a leadership role. So can I be a leader? Am I a leader? What do you say to those people?
Yes, you are. Did you wake up this morning? Did you want to get something done today? If you did, you're a leader, because you had to go from, we talk about, you know, leaders having vision. Like, look, you have it. It can be as simple as I got to make breakfast. What are you going to have? There's like 85,000 things you could have for breakfast. You have to have a vision, and then you have to have some ideas. You have to implement those ideas, and you execute, and then you reap the rewards. You eat breakfast. That's the simplest mindset. We're doing this all day long. And so realizing, what are you doing well around understanding the process? See, so many people are trained, and this is the big gap, right? So many of us are trained to be doers, and we're very good at the what we do. We learn all the skills. Let's say I become a salesperson. So I learn the skill of selling and the art of the close, but I don't necessarily step back and go, how do I do this? And it's the how that is so important. And I think for people like you and me, Allison, we spend our lives in process. We have to take a look at the unseen, the invisible forces that are going on. And so for me, all of us, because we're all leaders, we all need to be at least amateur students of human behavior and psychology, because I don't care what industry you're in, you're working with people. And that means that we are all in the people business. And so my goal is to give leaders better mindsets and better skill sets to help them to be more effective leaders.
Oh, that's amazing. And it's such important work, because as you said, you know, we're all in the people business. We're working with people each and every day. And as we can grow in our influence and the way that we're able to relate to others and communicate with others, it just expands the way that we can serve the world in a bigger way. And we can help in changing the world. So you have a book, and I want to talk a little bit about this book called Cracking the Leadership Code. So why did you decide to really create this book for leaders?
So the book was not something I just said, I need to write a leadership book. Let me sit down and write. So the book comes out of literally over 20 years of spending 3 or 4 days a week on the road, working with leaders and teams in different organizations, literally all around the world, thousands and thousands of teams, hundreds of thousands of leaders. Because what I kept seeing were the same patterns. I'm sure you see this too in your work, Allison. You see these same patterns show up time and time again. Turns out that all the best leaders had things in common. And mm-hmm. all the lousy leaders had things in common. And so what I started to do is listen to them and hear their stories, their specific stories, because I know as an adult educator, what brings learning to life are the stories. And so I turned the stories into blog posts, and I started blogging in 2011. And by 2013, I committed to writing a single blog post every single week. So I published on a Saturday, and I did not miss a Saturday for over 4 years. Well, 4 years later, I have 250 blog posts, and I started reviewing them, looking for the common categories and themes that kept showing up. Mm-hmm. And what I kept seeing time and time again, Allison, was there were three overarching themes that showed up in all of these stories. One was around connection, that what great leaders need to do well is connect. What lousy leaders don't do well is connect. The next one was around communication, is that, look, communication is the lifeblood of how we get ideas and information from one place to the other. And it's easier said than done. And then the third piece was around collaboration. How can we work together as effectively as possible to not just create great output, but for us to be able to perform at our best? So these three pieces, connection, communication, and collaboration, became the subtitle of the book, which we call The Three Secrets. Now, you know, the cat is out of the bag. The three secrets to building strong leaders are connection, communication, and collaboration. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, the book grew instead of kind of top down, it grew from the grassroots up. And what I did is I basically went through all of that and then structured it in a very engaging way, filled with stories, but backed by research and data, plus all of the stories that I had to bring this whole work to life.
Mm, what an amazing process, right? How, you know, when you started the blog, I'm sure you didn't think, you know, eventually what this is going to lead to is it's going to be a book and I'm going to be able to help and collect this. Essentially what you're doing is collecting research, right? You're collecting the research as you were out there on the, in the field, talking to leaders and groups and saying, hey, what are the things that are coming up? And I love that it's connection, communication, and collaboration, because as I'm working with leaders too, I keep seeing that in my own journey as a leader and being leading teams and boards and businesses, I see those three be the things that are the catalyst to either helping or hurting me personally, and also the teams that I'm working with. And so I think that that's a really fantastic way to break it down and make it simple, right? Because a lot of times we want to overcomplicate what leadership is or what you need to do. And what we really need are simpler ways to communicate and to help people understand what is it that I need to do in order to connect with my people? What is it that I need to do to connect with myself? How do I, you know, collaborate in those types of things?
Yeah. And even to make it even simpler for those visual thinkers out there, of which I know there are many, if you think of these three pieces of connection, communication, collaboration in three circles, mm-hmm. don't think of them as three independent circles. Don't even think of them as an overlapping Venn diagram. Think of them as nesting concentric circles, with the one in the middle being connection, because that's the heart of it. Then there's an overlapping circle around that. That's communication, because you need to connect first before you can communicate. And then you need to communicate before you can collaborate. So they all are actually totally nesting within each other. So super simple way to think about this. They all completely interrelate.
That is so awesome. And, you know, I love that you share it like that, because when I was a young leader, I remember that I wanted to get to collaboration right away. And I didn't recognize that connection was even a thing, because I had worked in business for so long. Sure. And I thought, you know, you just go straight to getting that task done. Right.
Yeah.
And I learned it the hard way that you needed to actually connect with the person first, and you needed to communicate with them. You needed to build that relationship, which led to the collaboration, but I did it backwards. And so many of us that are listening, you may be doing it backwards without even realizing it. So draw this out for yourself, keep it somewhere you can look at it each and every day to remember that first part of any relationship, whether it's in your business or personal life, is you need to connect with that person.
Completely. You know, you have named that trap that you fell into is such a common one. So many of us, because, you know, we think we're supposed to just jump into the work and get the task done. And the thing is, the task doesn't get done. People get the tasks done. And we have to remember, again, we are in the people business.
We are always in the people business. That's fantastic. So your work helps facilitate high performance in others. And I think that that's a really awesome thing, because we're talking to high performers right now. And so as you're thinking about that, what does it look like as you've been out on the field, you've been talking to all of these different organizations? Give me an example of what it looks like to have a really high performing team versus a not high performing team or a low performing team.
Sure. Yeah. So, well, let's start off by doing a little level setting around this idea of what does it mean to be a high performing leader and having a high performing team, right? Again, this is the natural trap, right? So many people wind up in leadership roles because they were high performers and they got stuff done. They're like, you're good at this. So we're going to promote you. Now you're the leader of the people who are doing this. But there's a big, huge gap between being that high performer and facilitating high performance in others. And you don't close that gap by just doing what you did. Working harder. So it's a completely different skill set. And so if we look at what are people that are doing this well, I mean, you think about the world that we live in today. We're in the digital age, the knowledge worker age. Information is cheap and it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And everyone who has an internet connection and a laptop has the same access to information as you. And so what the best leaders and best teams are doing is they are much kind of in the hierarchy. There's still a hierarchy in that. Yeah, you'll have a person who is the designated leader of the team. However, they don't see their role as commander in chief. They see their role as facilitator in chief, and their role is to move information from where it is to where it needs to be. Because the goal isn't to get the information. The goal is to create insight and common understanding. And the reason that's so important is because common understanding is what is going to drive good decision-making. If we don't have good understanding, then we can't have good insight. We're not going to make good decisions, which means we're not going to get good results. So what they're doing is they are basically facilitating, convening. Think about a really well-run meeting. Now, some of us have to imagine them because we've had so few of them. But a well-run meeting, first of all, you know, why are you there? You have a clear agenda. And what are we doing? Are we giving input and are we making a decision? Or are we giving input for somebody else to make a decision? And so what the best teams and the best leaders do is they're super clear around their expectations. One of the things I love to say is that people are good at many things, but reading minds is not one of them. And so a key to facilitating well is being super clear on your expectations. What are we trying to accomplish? And making sure that you have agreement from everyone else before you just try to push your way into whatever your agenda is, mm-hmm. right? Because the old school leader, right, was all about push, like this is what we're doing and you're coming with me. And at best, what those leaders got from their people was compliance, at best. But what you didn't get was commitment. And in this age of transparency, where we have LinkedIn, we've got Glassdoor, we've got Indeed, people are looking, you know, I saw the most recent stats, more than 70% of people are considering looking for a new job this year. And I don't know if you've heard, I just wrote an article about this for Forbes last week on the Great Resignation. I mean, in April, we set a new U.S. Department of Labor record. 4 million people resigned from their jobs in April. 3.6 million resigned in May. So people are not going to put up with that lousy leadership. And so if you can't create a compelling value proposition beyond a paycheck and beyond a you have a job, you are going to be out of luck. And so we all collectively as leaders need to raise our game and realize what is the compelling reason. Now, it turns out that there's four key elements to people being able to perform at their best and to want to stay with you. Number one is people have to feel safe. And that means physically safe as well as psychologically safe, which means they feel cared for, that they feel that you value them as people first and foremost, which is why a lot of people, now that we're coming out of coronavirus pandemic, are going, you know what? The way you treated me over this time, I'm ready for a change. I'm ready for a change. Mm-hmm. So the first piece is around safety. The next piece is around energy. So what are you doing to create an energized environment where people are excited to come to work? And there's some simple things that you can be doing. Like, for example, when you have team meetings, do you schedule them all literally back to back, 60 minutes to 60 minutes to 60 minutes, where people have zero time? Because it works on paper, right? It works for your scheduling software. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for human beings. And so giving people a 5-minute break, like starting to think, you know, at the core of all this is human beings. We're working with human beings. So making energy. So creating energy is the second piece. The third piece is around having a clear sense of purpose. Turns out the number one thing that motivates people is feeling like they're making progress towards a meaningful goal. You know, we spend more time with our coworkers than we do with our family members. So what's your compelling reason why people should be showing up and putting in that kind of effort beyond a paycheck? Because all the research would say a paycheck will only go so far. So what is your purpose? What is your reason for being? How are you serving your customers, your stakeholders, your employees? How are you serving society? It turns out that you look at Gen Z and Gen Y, they would pay 70% more to work with a company that has a complete compelling social purpose, and they'll take their dollars elsewhere. And so will your employees. So purpose is the third one, meaning and purpose. And the fourth one is around ownership, is that, look, no one wants to be micromanaged. So what are you doing to create freedom and autonomy? And so people can creatively solve problems on their own. You know, you want to give them a framework, but within that framework, you have the guardrails, give them the freedom and the latitude to be able to show up and treat them with the respect that adults deserve. So again, just to recap those four human needs, you've got safety, you've got energy, you've got ownership, and you've got purpose. And that's what separates out great leaders from the lousy ones.
Oh my gosh, those are so good. And it's so true, because if you've ever worked for a lousy leader, you can probably go through that list and you can say, oh yeah, now I see why that didn't work. Yeah. If you weren't aware of that, perhaps, or you worked with a great leader and you're like, that's why it worked, because I had those, I felt safe. I felt like I had energy in the environment. I was able to do what I needed to do, which is the ownership. And I had a purpose that was bigger than me. And I think from your experience, people want to know that the work that they're doing matters, right? And recognizing that, how big of a piece is the appreciation of showing appreciation in some way, shape, or form to your employees or to your team? What have you seen?
Oh, it's massively huge. I mean, again, it falls under that sense of meaning and purpose. Yeah. I mean, look, the thing that demotivates people the most is the sense that whatever I'm doing today isn't amounting to anything. And I just feel like we say the proverbial coal mine, you know, whether it's a literal coal mine or not, you just feel like you're just, there you are digging away at stuff. Just it's activity, and no one wants that. But yeah, appreciation is key. But here's one of the big fallacies around appreciation that leaders fall into. And there's been numerous studies have shared this. So if you ask leaders, do you appreciate your people? 80 to 85% say, yeah, I appreciate my people regularly. If you ask their people, how much does your leader appreciate you? Only 15 to 20% say, my leader appreciates me on a frequent enough basis for me. And so what that shows me is what's called the fundamental attribution bias, which basically is a fancy way to say is that we judge ourselves on our intentions, right? So all those leaders, they mean well. Like, I'm a good person. I appreciate people. In my mind, I totally appreciate them. It's like, again, people are not mind readers. You may feel that way, but are you demonstrating it? Are you explicitly expressing it in a way that they get it for absolute certain? And if you're not doing enough. And so we judge ourselves on the intention, but we judge other people on their behaviors. And this is why we have this gap. And what leaders have to understand is you need to close that gap by being more overt and more explicit about how you think and feel and behave towards people than you think you are. You have to lean way more in to the relationship than you think. Because look, at its core, what is leadership? Leadership is a relationship. It's a relationship that exists between a person who leads and a person who chooses to follow. And ultimately, followership is a choice. And if you don't give them that compelling reason to choose to follow, at best, you're going to get compliance. And at worst, they're out of here.
Absolutely. So good. You just hit on so many different points. It's amazing. And, you know, as you're talking and as I'm listening to you, and I just keep thinking to myself, how in the world did you get here? Right? Like, you have launched in so many ways, and I can tell that you've done the research and you've worked with amazing companies and you've been able to do all of the things, right? And so our listeners love to hear about how people have launched in their life. And so I'd love for you to share 2 to 3 things you've done in your personal life to go to that next level.
Yeah, certainly. You know, it certainly has not been a straight line. You know, it's funny. So here I am working with all these business leaders around the world and big, you know, Fortune 100 companies, et cetera. I was telling you before we went on air, you know, I went to the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee for graduate school. I went to the professional theater training program. So I trained to be a professional actor. Okay. And my undergrad is in liberal arts. So I was mainly an English major with a psych minor, but pretty dabbled. I was a dabbler. You know, I was not like, I'm on this path. I'm going to be an author and a speaker. Like, I didn't know I was going to do any of this stuff at the time. So I'd say the things that launched me, it was pretty early on, I'd say in my early 20s, when I really wasn't sure where I was going professionally. You know, I just finished grad school. One of the things was a friend of mine told me about this professional, actually personal development workshop that he had gone through. And in fact, he told me about it. And I went, yeah, that sounds good. We were in grad school together and he did this training our first year. And the way I saw the changes in him show up, I was like, I want some of what John's having, whatever that is. I need some of that. So the first thing I did that I think really launched, I went on this personal development training, which helped me to connect with my own personal sense of mission and purpose. It taught me a ton of things. Plus it gave me these role models I had never seen. So I came off of this training on fire, just like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that I had this potential inside me, nor did everyone else. And that helped me. So the first thing, and I get this from Jim Rohn, many of you have heard of Jim Rohn, the corporate philosopher at this point, who said, work harder on yourself than you do on your job. So I think the first thing that launched me was investing in my own personal development. And the fact is, your personal development is your professional development. And to be developed as a leader, the only way you do that is by developing yourself as a person. You can't suddenly turn it on when you're at work and then turn it off when you're not, you know, when you're back at home with your family. So investing in yourself, and that work is not for the faint of heart. So that's the second thing I will say in this entire process of personal development is find people who will give you honest feedback about how you're really showing up. And don't ask your mom, don't ask your puppy, because they're both going to say, I love you. Hopefully they will. But the goal is to find people who are going to give you, and I mean, constructive feedback. But I'll tell you, it was the people, it was those tough conversations when people said, you know, Alain, you know, you're kind of an intense guy and you can come across as a bit bullying and arrogant. And when I had heard that from the fourth and fifth and sixth person, I had to start going, wait, but what you don't understand. You have I was like, time out, six versus one, maybe again, intention versus perception. Mm-hmm. So it's learning how to get rid of that fundamental attribution bias where you're, you know, I know what I intend, but I'm not showing up that way. And so the more that you can start to develop that kind of, I call it a kind of a dual skin, right? You want to have a thick enough skin that, you know, that little things don't hurt you. And you want to have a sensitive enough skin to let things in, porous enough. And that is an art form. And that is a lifetime journey of learning how to do that. I'm still learning how to do that. So those two things have been huge. And I'd say along with feedback, as I think about my own professional development and personal development, is being willing to ask for help. You know, I'm a big fan of this idea of who, not how. You don't need to figure it all out yourself. So if you don't need to figure it out, who knows how to do it? And basically it comes down to a few things is you can figure out yourself, which is going to take you a lot of time, might take you some money. You can pay somebody else to do it, or you can either ask somebody or pay somebody else to teach you how to do it or to do it themselves for you. So just realizing those are your options. And depending on your strengths and what you want to do, you may be very well served outsourcing a number of things that you're trying to take on yourself. And to another thing a mentor told me, said, Alain, you know, as you are running a business and moving forward, you know, don't spend your time doing $5 an hour tasks, right? You want to be spending your time doing $500 or $5,000 an hour tasks and delegate out the $5 an hour task. Otherwise, you will be running a $5 an hour business. Mm. And that really struck with me too. And then I'll share one more because it just came to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just, yeah, I'm on a roll, which is one other one because I was, and some of you may relate to this. I call myself a recovering perfectionist, right? I was a straight A student. Like I was all about you too. All right. So Allison's like, give me So recovering perfectionist was like, oh, I've got to do this well because, you know, I'm a hyper achiever. And I felt like, you know, if I could do, all, I mean, we could psychoanalyze me all day, but yeah, I felt like if I just did this and did this, then I'd be worthy. And, you know, I'd get to this top of this mountain and like, okay, now what? I'd feel happy for 2 seconds and then like I need the next mountain. So here's the thing that one of my mentors told me in my journey of recovering perfectionism that at the time hit me like a ton of bricks and it still does. And he said, Helen, here's your issue. You approach every test in life trying to get 100. The problem is a lot of tests in life are only pass fail. Right. I'll let that one sink in there for a second. Allison's like, yeah, right. That's powerful, right? Because you think about it, not everything is worth giving 100% quality effort. I know that the perfectionist out there are like, what are you saying? You can't do this. Like you have every nerve cell in your body is like, I know I'm one of you. But the challenge is realizing not everything is and being okay with like, ooh, letting that go. It's okay. It's okay. And also if you think about having some empathy for yourself and maybe even call it forgiveness for yourself, as you're stepping further into these leadership roles in your life, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's parents, you know, your parents or you parenting your own kids, is having a little bit of grace and slack and forgiveness for other people is a really valuable leadership skill. Because otherwise, you're going to be set up for a lot of disappointment a lot of the time. So I found those lessons to be hugely helpful. So that was more than two, but I hope we touched on some things.
That was amazing. Well, and I think the recovering perfectionist really recognizing and starting to categorize, okay, is this something where I need to put my full effort or not? I had a mentor who kind of said, like, look through your day and figure out what are the tasks that you need to give 100% and what can you just kind of just get by? And so thinking about your life that way and really recognizing where am I putting my time and energy and being okay with saying no to people that aren't giving that energy back or situations that aren't. I just had that situation happen this morning. It's like, yeah, you know, except this wasn't working for me. And so I don't need to support that situation or that relationship anymore. And that's okay, right? And walking away from things that aren't serving the best version of you and not putting too much time and energy into that, right? And just be like, okay, we're going, we're moving forward. And I think that those things are so good. So thank you so much for sharing that. And for our launch listeners, remember, personal development is professional development. I love that you said it that way, because it is what you're doing right now, listening to this podcast, learning from a brilliant, brilliant leader. That's how we get better, because we learn from others and then we try to apply things to our lives and we leave other things and then we can become a better version of ourselves and we can show up in our lives in a different way. And I think that's so, so important. Another thing I wanted to ask you is, what is one way that you have dealt with the stress of this last year?
Wow. Great question. Lots of things coming up this past year. So one of the things that I do is I have a practice of, it's called positive intelligence. And actually my colleague Shirzan Famin has developed this whole system for which I do some coaching on this. And I actually lead people through this as well. And basically, if you think about it, we have two brains. You can talk to neuroscientists, but we have like two different brains. We have like a positive side brain. It's like, and a negative side brain. You know, if you're a Star Wars fan, you can think of this as like your inner Darth Vaders and your inner Jedi, right? And they sort of battle each other out. And so one of the things when we get stressed is because all those inner Darth Vaders, or we call them the inner saboteurs, tend to win. Like, oh, you know, you're either judging yourself or judging other people or the circumstances. Like, why won't the world open up? This isn't fair, et cetera, et cetera. And that really brings you down. And so the work of positive intelligence is ultimately about learning how to identify those negative thought patterns and use what we call PQ, short for positive intelligence quotient. And this is all about, basically, if you're familiar with mindfulness or meditation, this is the kind of the root level of that, which is basically, and you can try it right now, is just giving exquisite attention to one of your physical senses. So you can all try this right now. You're listening to this. If you just want to practice this, is take your index finger and your thumb and just on both hands and just rub them together, but just focus your attention on your tactile sense of touch so strongly that you can start to feel the ridges in your fingertips. And if you do that for literally just 10 seconds, you will start to notice a slight, ever so slight shift in your kind of physical being, of being a little calmer. So you can do that with touch. You can do that with sight. You can do it with sound, smell. You can do it while you're eating, while you're chewing. And I find it's like just grounding myself in my sensory world. Because, you know, when we're stressed, you're not in your body. You're in your head. You're like, this is going to happen. That's going to happen. Oh, I didn't do this. I'm going to get there. My list isn't done, right? You're like everywhere but here. So what I love about this PQ practice is to help you to ground in the here and now. And yeah, and I work with people over 6 weeks. We take them through a kind of a PQ boot camp to learn how to rewire. So you're actually accessing more your positive brain than your negative brain. So anyway, so that's a really cool, simple thing. And you can just start doing that on your own. And if you want more information, certainly reach out.
Absolutely. Well, this has been such an amazing episode. Thank you so much for sharing your stories and your wisdom and your ideas about being a facilitative leader. This has just been so good. So how do people get a hold of you, Alain?
Sure. Well, easiest place is to go to my website, which is alainhunkins.com. I will spell that for you. If you're driving, make sure you pull over before you write this down. It's www.alainhunkins.com. And there you can learn all about the work that I do. I do work with individuals, do coaching. I also work with teams and organizations, whether it's through speaking or training or consulting. So please do reach out. And if you've listened this far along the way, you are part of the End of the Podcast Club. club. Yay, you've listened this far, which means that if you want to email me directly with a question, it's Ella, A-L-A-I-N, at AllaHunkins.com. And I do respond to all End of the Podcast Club emails I receive. So thank you for listening.
Yay, look at that. How fantastic. I appreciate you.
Yeah, and if you come over to the website, you can download the first chapter of the book there and stuff like that. You can, there's all sorts of, there's a free ebook on navigating trust, all sorts of resources, articles, etc.
Absolutely. It is filled with resources, friends. So make sure you check that out and watch his video. It's phenomenal. I love looking and learning and growing alongside of you today. So thank you again for sharing your wisdom. Thank you to our launch listeners for listening. If you love this episode, make sure that you rate it and share it with somebody in your life, because you never know who is trying to up their leadership game today. And what was shared today will absolutely help them. And also, go buy that book, Cracking the Leadership Code. Just get it and trust that you are going to learn so much from it. Thanks again and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Launch Podcast. I'm Allison Little, and I'm so excited that you spent your time with me. Look for future episodes and connect with me on social media or at my website at www.allisonlittle.com.